There was an individual who was making a trip overseas. He lived in New York, and he was going overseas to visit his son, family in yeshiva. And a neighbor of his asked him if he might take two jars of Nescafe coffee to his son learning in school in Israel. He knew that, you know, it would mean a lot to his son to receive this package from his parents back home. So this the traveler agreed that he would transport these his coffee jars over to the son. As the story has it, the you know these two coffee jars started getting in the way of things, and there was weight restraints and limitations on luggage and baggage, and everywhere they turned, all these two coffee jars always just got in the way, and they were scared it would break and create tremendous damage to all his belongings. And they decided in the airport, you know, this is getting a little bit out of hand. I know that they sell these exact coffee, this exact type of coffee in Israel. I'm not interested in schlepping the coffee overseas. And even though it means a lot to the son, you know what, we'll just dispose of these coffees right here. Not even sure if they were allowed to take it on flight or not. And when we get to Israel, we'll purchase the coffees. This is people of means. You know, the $8, it didn't mean much to them. And we'll purchase these two jars of coffee and give it to them. And it's just worth, it's, you know, just worth our peace of mind not to have to worry about this, our neighbor's son's coffee jars, a whole flight and a whole trip. So that's what they did. They disposed of it and they came to Israel, purchased coffee and delivered it to his son. They get a frantic phone call from the parents back home, and they asked him, why didn't you deliver the coffee? To which he responded, we did. He said, but you didn't deliver those exact coffee jars, did you? They said, no, actually, we have to admit that we decided to dispose of those coffees. We purchased it, but it doesn't really make a difference. It's the exact same jar. He said, but you don't understand. I'm embarrassed to tell you about this, but we had put in those coffee jars, we had put diamonds inside of the coffee jars, and we were actually, you know, quote-unquote, smuggling the diamonds overseas. And when you threw out those coffee jars, I don't know where they are right now, somewhere in the Hudson River, inside was a value of tens of thousands of dollars. And we'd like you to, we'd like to take you to Beis Din and to try to figure out if you owe us that money. You damaged our goods. You accepted responsibility to transfer the coffee jars over. And you threw them out. You did not uphold your responsibility, and therefore you have to pay. To which he responded, I never knew about the diamonds, and I'm not willing to take a chrayus. What is the halacha? Now, this is obviously not something that will happen day to day, and it's obviously the purpose of this shiur is not to get into the isurim and the reasons why this act is obviously not acceptable api halacha, but just for the sake of understanding the hilchas shomrim, a fascinating shaila, understanding the concept of a shomer, of somebody who, a guardian who accepts upon himself responsibility to watch something. What are his obligations? There are four types of shomrim that are talked about in halacha. There's a shomer chinam, which is our case, where the person accepts upon himself to watch an item, to transport an item, without getting paid at all. He has nothing to gain, and he has his only obligation that he has to fulfill to accept that item. There's a shomer sachar, a person who gets paid for watching. He derives a pleasure, a craftsman, a service that dry cleaners that accepts a job, that anything that's entrusted in their hands at the time of anything that's accepted in their hands, is they're obligated to watch, and they're considered a shomer sachar, and that obligation actually creates an obligation on them that they have to make sure and ensure that it doesn't get lost or stolen as well. Hashem Rechinam, somebody who's watching for free, is only obligated if they're negligent. Hashem Asachar accepts upon himself the obligation of Gneva and Aveda, of lost and theft as well. There's a Seicher, a renter, who has an added obligation similar to Hashem Asachar. And finally, a Shoel, somebody who borrows something where he's not gaining anything. The lender of the item has no pleasure, has no hanoah in what he's lending. He's not getting paid for his item, and therefore the borrower accepts upon himself responsibility of all risks and any type of mishap that might happen. He accepts upon himself the responsibility of even oinus, even something that's beyond his control. Now, this person being a shem echinim, obviously this is rendered as an act of negligence. He had no right, even though he was not happy with what he accepted upon himself. He wanted to go back on his word, and he wanted to purchase the actual item overseas. But he had the obligation to continue on with this item, and to continue on with his responsibility. However, the Rambam, and his words are echoed by the Shulchan Aruch as well, The Rama maintains that in order for a person to effectively accept upon himself the responsibility of a shomer, the responsibility of a guardian that will make him responsible for the negligence or for any type of mishap that happens to the item, he needs an acquisition. He has to make a halachically acceptable method of acquisition. He has to lift up the item or pull the item, and in this case, there lacks that method of acquisition. Although he accepted upon himself to watch the items that were given to him, that were entrusted in his possession, but since there were other articles that he did not know about, and he was never entrusted with those articles, so those hidden articles he never accepted upon himself, and he never made that method of acquisition. Therefore, arguably, he would be putter. He would not be obligated to pay for those articles because he never accepted upon himself to watch those articles, to guard those articles. He never accepted upon himself responsibility to pay for in the eventuality that those articles would be lost or stolen or destroyed. However, which is something that's very important whenever learning Choshen Mishpat. Choshen Mishpat is about diagnostics. A person, in order for to be able to zero in on the psak, on the decision, on why and what the halacha would be, a person has to effectively put the proper term to the individual and be able to classify him in a way that the Shulchan Aruch classifies him. And this person, although he is a guardian and he has accepted to watch these items, but since he took the article, he took these articles that were entrusted in his hand, and he be a daim with his own free will, he took those and he actually destroyed them. So he has an added obligation of a mazik, of a person who damages. That means he's not only looked at in halacha as somebody who has agreed to protect the item, but he actually went ahead and destroyed the item, and he has to pay like a mazik, like somebody who damages. Now the Gemara in Bava Kama and the Shulchan Aruch many times talks about the concept of Adam Mu'ud La'olam. A person is responsible for damage even if he has zero intent. He's responsible even for things that are out of his control. There's actually a machlokes, there's a difference of opinion between the Rambam and the Tosfos exactly how far out of his control a damager is responsible to pay. Tosfos is of the opinion that if it's totally out of his control and it's a situation which is referred to as Ruach Ke'en Shel Eliyahu HaNavi. There's a fierce wind of the magnitude that happened in the times of Eliyahu HaNavi, that the wind was so out of control that it was impossible to stop. In that case, says Tosfos, that a damager would not be obligated to pay. In other words, if he was holding an item, his friend's item, and the wind came, a gust of wind, a very strong wind came and threw the item to the ground, he would be absolved, he would be pater. The Ramban and the Rambam are of the opinion that even in this even in a tremendously fierce wind, he would be obligated to pay. So going back to our scenario, even though if he would be looked at as a shomer, as a guardian, he would be putter, because in this case he never accepted upon himself the responsibility of those diamonds. He never knew that the diamonds existed, and he never accepted to pay in the event that these items would get destroyed. But since he went ahead and he threw the jars into the garbage, and he did away with them, so therefore he would be responsible to pay, even though he didn't know that these things existed, and he didn't know that he was damaging something of such significant value. And based on the concept of Adam Mu'ud La'olam, he would be responsible to pay. Now the only question is, how do we know that the diamonds really existed? Maybe these people are lying. Maybe these people are not saying the truth. And how does Beis Din look at the fact that when one person says you damaged, and inside there were diamonds, and you were damaged by diamonds, therefore you're responsible for the entire value of the diamonds, and the Mazik says, I don't know, I have no idea. So usually, we know the klal of Hamoitzeh Mechaveiro Lo Haraya, that possession is 9/10 of the law, and if you're trying to obligate me to pay, you have to prove your case. You have to bring two witnesses that will attest to the fact that hidden inside these jars were diamonds, and therefore, since you damaged my diamonds, you have to pay the full value of the diamonds. But if you don't have witnesses attesting to this fact, in that case, the person could say, I don't trust you, I don't know that they were diamonds, and I'm not paying you for those diamonds. However, there's a takana, the rabbis instituted a special oath, a special shvua, that when a person goes ahead and he damages his friend, and he damages somebody else, and we don't know how much he damaged, so it wouldn't be fair just to say, prove to me what you damaged. You went ahead and did something wrong. You went ahead and damaged my article, and you're claiming that there was something of significant value, and maybe there was, and you can't say that you don't want to pay because we're not sure what was inside. So the Chachamim instituted that if the Nizik, if the owner of the article, comes to Beis Din and swears and takes an oath that hidden inside this item was something of significant value, and therefore he stole or he damaged something that was of much greater value than what appeared to the eye, in that case, he would be able to extrapolate the funds even if he doesn't have proof. The oath itself is able to obligate the damager or the thief to repay what he alleges was inside. Now the question is, in this case the Shach in Chosh Mishpat and Simon Reish Sadak Aleph maintains that since the person, when he gave over the item, he represented this item to be of insignificant value, that even though he is ready to take an oath and to swear that there was something of substantial value inside, that is not enough to obligate him, because since he originally stipulated, and it looks like it was merely something of insignificant value, this takanas anigzal would not apply in this case, and therefore, unless he has two kosher witnesses attesting to the fact that there were these stones inside, and he would bring these witnesses to Beis Din, and they would testify to this effect, he would not be obligated to pay in this case, and therefore, in our case, the same thing would apply. That's unless he can prove that those stones did exist, he would not be obligated to pay.
This presentation has been brought to you by the Orthodox Union in conjunction with the Beis Havad Institute of Talmudic Law, the Center for the Study and Practice of Monetary Halacha.